Hey there, Mike.
Hello.
We're back with Julio again.
We are.
Following up to the last episode where we talked to Mr. Julio Ojeda Zapata.
Hello.
About, Google Plus and Facebook and Twitter. Oh, my. It's, it's just exploding social networks around here. Much kind of different than the direction I've been going. I just want to follow up before we jump into how you're managing all this stuff. Yes, I almost said crap. I'm glad I didn't. I really want to, I want to say, okay, so I had a revelation on Monday as to kind of you're as we discussed last episode, you're to use a poker metaphor, you're going all in. You're putting all your chips on the table when it comes to social networking. Facebook, Google+, Twitter, you've got the tripod, you're doing it all, right? And you think you've got a pretty good hand and you're playing it. And that's great, all the power to you, right? I think my hand's pretty good too. But here's the thing. I'm actually... I'm doubling down on email. That's what it is. I'm doubling down on email. I had a revelation about this on Monday, and it dawned on me that there are certain things I really enjoy and appreciate about email. In the same way that you're having these wonderful, engaging conversations on Google Plus and Facebook to some extent, and Twitter, I've had some of those too. I found that recently, the conversations that I've been having via email, and to some extent via iChat, are also very compelling and very fulfilling to me. But even more so, they're private by default. And I realized, actually, in talking about with somebody about Steve Jobs and how and philanthropy and how we all know about Warren Buffett, Bill Gates, they're giving away all their money before they die, and they're getting rid of it all, and they're going to only leave $10 to their kids, and their kids are fine with that because they understand how important it is to give. And that you didn't hear anything about Steve Jobs giving until now. Recently, you've started to hear, folks like the Product Red guy go, "Oh man, we'd be in the tank without Steve Jobs' guidance and contributions, and both personal and monetary, and that he gave prolifically."
But he was a private man. I mean, and so mm-hmm. he's going to be as private about something like. Financial, so giving away money as he would be everything else in his life, I guess.
Right, but I would also like to think that part of that too is that true charity comes without personal, without other outside reward for mm-hmm. doing so, right? That charity, when done in that sense, your reward is completely personal. It's the feeling that it gives you inside, and that no one has to know that you've given or that you're giving, and that to me that there's a certain nobility to that. There's a certain honor to that. Not knocking, people who publicly give lots of money and things like that, and that's great. That's fine. That's wonderful. But I think that when you do that, you naturally get a certain amount of personal public praise from people. Wow, isn't it great that Warren Buffett is giving away his entire fortune before he dies, or Bill Gates is giving away most of it, or what have you? Isn't that fantastic? And, we should be like that. I think that there's something to be said for. That kind of private by default giving. That said, I'm simply using that as a metaphor as to why email has become... I'm falling back in love with it. And it is that idea of, quite frankly, you know, people will ask me a question or will, you know, say, wow, I think what you're doing with Minimal Mac is great or what have you. On Twitter or whatever, I'm very, very thankful for that. But when someone takes the time to sit down and compose a long email to tell me how much the work that I'm doing or what they read in my book or something I said meant to them privately. I mean, it's the difference between announcing in the middle of the bar, hey, look at Julio here. He's such a great guy. Everyone give him a hand, you know, to me just pulling aside and saying, Julio, what, you know, your friendship means a lot to me. And I really appreciate your being in my life and being willing to share your life with me. And that's, you know, and so that's my driving force. And I just want to make that very clear because I think a lot of people kind of walked away from, you included, Michael, kind of walked away from, you know, some of my thoughts about Twitter and Facebook and privacy and all this stuff with the idea of that I was just kind of poo-pooing it. But in fact, I think it's a little bit deeper than that. I think it's, you know, it's kind of how I prefer to have these conversations, and I'd like to have lots more of them privately. Patrick@patrickrone.com. Anyone is welcome to use it.
And that's a really good point. When I'm on social media, almost 100% of the time, I'm in public mode.
Mm-hmm.
Like on Google Plus, for instance, you can create circles for certain groups of people and then just send stuff to them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm finding that I very rarely do that on Twitter, right. On Facebook, on right. Google Plus. I'm public, almost 100% of the time.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But if I want to have a fulfilling conversation of a private nature,
right.
I'll just automatically, just like you, I'll just automatically default back to email.
Yeah.
Like, for instance, I have very good friends that have absolutely no use for social media whatsoever.
Right.
So I obviously can't do anything on Google Plus or Facebook with those people. It's right. Email.
Yeah.
One of my very, very good friends here in St. Paul, we don't see each other as much as we'd like because we're very busy with our families, but we have very, you know, fulfilling exchanges on email.
Right, right.
And those are messages that I take great care to save.
Yeah.
Because they'll have value for me in the future. I can look back at them.
So now that we've kind of laid all that out there, I want to get back to the tools. I want to understand because me personally, I think trying to manage all that you do
mm-hmm.
would drive me bonkers without the right tools. And you obviously have found tools that work very well for you.
I'm a social media tool addict.
So what's resonating with you? What's changing your game and allowing you to keep up in the way that you do?
Well, I'll kick off this discussion with one moment in time. I was at Chili's eating with my family, and my wife has a rule when you're having a family meal, you put the damn iPhone away. Put it away. Don't look at it. I've been known to sneak off to the bathroom to get it really quick. But, we were having this meal, this iPhone-less meal, so the iPhone was put away. And as a result, I was about 90 minutes delayed in finding out that Steve Jobs had died. And I found this out in the car because, you know, when my wife is usually the one who's driving and I'm riding shotgun, I'm usually, my nose is buried in my iPhone and I'm checking my Twitter. And that's when I found out how Steve Jobs had died. And I went on a retweeting frenzy. I kept seeing these tweets that said things about Steve Jobs that I just had to share. And so I must have retweeted 40 times during that car ride.
Yeah.
And this sort of leads me to tell you what app I was using to do that.
Mm.
I've had a recent epiphany regarding Tweetbot.
Congratulations.
Okay. Tweetbot, I had never been sold on Tweetbot, but it suddenly dawned on me, Tweetbot is the perfect Twitter app.
I would actually say that I think that it is, in my opinion, the best iPhone app ever made.
I'm not sure I'd go quite that far, but it's one of the best iPhone apps ever made. It's by far the best Twitter app ever made. And the way I was able to sit in the car and sort of in a very frictionless way share. And I should point out that I juggle two Twitter accounts. I have one Twitter account that is my public Twitter persona, OJEZAP, my public Twitter persona, and that's where I have, that's where people follow me. I have 12,000 plus followers on OJEZAP. The problem with that is I can't keep track of what everybody's saying. There's just absolutely no way. So I've created this separate Twitter account that's almost like a Google Reader account. It's almost like an RSS account where I very, very, very selectively follow people who have things to say that are of interest to me.
Mm.
And so I'll be monitoring this you know, quote unquote, I'm making air quotes here, Reader Twitter account, and that's where I find all these gems that I have to share. But here's the problem: very few Twitter apps let you retweet something from this account, but retweet it
as this other account.
As this other account.
Right. Gotcha.
I had been using Hootsuite. Hootsuite lets you do that, but Hootsuite is very inelegantly designed app. I like elegance.
Yeah.
Tweetbot has it in spades, but I hadn't used Tweetbot because I didn't realize that if you press the retweet button and hold, it pulls up a little pop-up menu and it lets you pick the account you want to retweet from. I didn't realize that until recently. And that one little discovery completely sold me on Tweetbot, and I've switched over to it completely. And I've come to the conclusion that the thing is a masterpiece. In fact, on Google Plus, I wrote a post about how apps like Tweetbot would not exist without Steve Jobs, would not exist without the iPhone. Pre-iPhone, smartphones were terrible. They were badly designed. Apps on them were horrible.
Yeah, they all sucked.
They were terrible. Not a single one. Absolutely terrible.
They all sucked.
Steve Jobs came along, created the iPhone, showed people what an iPhone could be, and then very shortly thereafter created the App Store and triggered a frenzy of creativity. Apple sort of led the way and other app developers followed, and it soon became apparent what an iPhone app could be, what was possible, what beauty and grace and elegance could be put into an app. And as I blogged, quote unquote blogged on Google Plus, Tweetbot epitomizes that.
Yeah,
it is a prime example of the kind of app that became possible not only due to the creativity of the author, but Steve Jobs, who sort of spawned this creative frenzy.
Yeah,
it's a masterpiece, and I live for apps like that.
Yeah.
I love Tweetbot so much that, you know, when I started using it in the last couple of weeks, it's my primary Twitter app. I was like upset that I didn't have I kept refreshing and I didn't have anything to do on it. I wanted to use it, but I had used up all my possibilities, and I was like desperate, waiting an hour so that, you know, more stuff could come in so I could use it again. And I don't feel that way with most apps.
So then what are you using? Are you using anything else for Twitter stuff? I know, Michael, you use not only Tweetbot. I know you're a big fan of Tweetbot, but you're also a big fan of what's the one where you can kind of track your Twitter stats and stuff like that? Is that Bird Brain?
Bird Brain, yeah. I'm a big fan of Bird Brain.
Yeah. You talked about that recently on your one of your other podcasts, the App Orchard podcast, right?
You are correct.
Yes.
Yeah, I really enjoy BirdBrain because it allows me to be absolutely maniacal about finding out how many people are following me and who it was that unfollowed me yesterday. And, you know, because anyone that says they don't care about that, then they're lying.
I don't care about that.
You're a liar.
I'm not a liar. I don't care about that either. I just do not follow it.
Well,
do not track
maybe
it. Do not
maybe
watch
it doesn't
care.
Matter when you get into a four-figure follow account, eh?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I don't think it's that. I don't think I've ever cared. But I don't know. I'm not driven that way. You know, I don't care about the dangs.
but my point is, I'm going to put, we're just focusing on Twitter apps right now. I put my Twitter apps into two categories.
Right.
they're the Twitter apps that I live for because they're so damn beautiful and cool.
Right.
Tweetbot fits into that category. On the iPad, the official Twitter app is beautiful. It's just very elegantly, beautifully designed app. Hmm. And then there is a separate category of apps that I use very actively because they're just turbocharged. They're just packed with functionality and power.
Hmm.
And they might be like butt ugly, but they're just very powerful, and I therefore rely on them quite a bit. Like on the iPad, there's a version of Hootsuite for the iPad.
Yeah.
And it lets me do Tweetbot type stuff on the iPad, but it's an eyesore. The damn thing is an eyesore.
Yeah.
But it's just packed with power. Like I can tap it and hold my finger down, and then it'll ask me, okay, do you want to retweet this from this account or this account? And do you want to retweet it the regular way, or do you want to quote? I mean, it just gives you all these options. Yeah. It's just massive amount of flexibility. On my Mac, for instance, I use the official Twitter app, but the official Twitter app frustrates me because it's designed in a very minimalist way, and therefore it's lacking many features that I consider important.
Yeah.
Like if I'm in one account, I can't like retweet from another account.
Yeah.
I've exchanged tweets with the developer about that, and he's aware of this. And he's acknowledged that, you know, this is probably something important for him to do. He just hasn't done it yet. And so I am forced with the greatest reluctance because it's the most hideous thing I've ever laid eyes on. I'm forced at times to fire up TweetDeck.
Gotcha.
Oh, God, it's so ugly. And Seismic Desktop is another example. One of them runs on Silverlight, Microsoft Silverlight.
Oh, gosh.
The other one runs on, Adobe...
Flash.
Air.
Adobe Air.
Yeah.
And they're... these apps, you know, in terms of aesthetics, have no place on the Mac.
Yeah, not...
They're just uncomfortable, I think, is probably the best way to describe them that I find. When you're using them, it has the web app feel, but on a desktop, so things just don't feel responsive enough.
But they have so much power and flexibility. I'll give you one example. I don't think I've told you this angle before. Stop me if I have. I was sitting at my iMac on a weekend at home, and I had Seismic Desktop open. And Seismic Desktop is a multi-column app, and therefore it takes up my whole screen. And the reason that can be useful at times is because it lets you get a feel for what's happening on Twitter in a way that a single column app does not.
Yeah, yeah. You can kind of almost like get the mood of Twitter, as it were.
And the mood I got that weekend day was suddenly started noticing all these references to Comcast and how people's Comcast internet service had broken down and they had lost their internet connectivity. And I was sitting there scratching my head because, you know, these people are just down the street and I'm fine.
Mm-hmm.
And I discovered, you know, with a little bit of research that it was a domain
DNS
outage.
DNS outage.
And I had my DNS set to the Google DNS.
Right, so you didn't see it.
So I didn't see it, but these other people were their internet service was crashing and burning, and I very quickly shifted into journalist mode and started gathering all these stories, and I blogged about it. And I figured out, okay, if you have this problem, what is the solution? You just switch your DNS settings. Mm-hmm. And I started putting that information out there. And I very quickly became a resource to other people on the internet. You told them what to do. And this was important because Comcast was not doing that. Comcast was not telling people what to do.
Well, of course not. They wouldn't tell them to change their DNS settings to Comcast.
And I, in fact, contacted Comcast and said, you know, what's going on? And they said, oh, well, we seem to be experiencing a problem, and we are looking into what the solution is, and we will get back to you at the appropriate time.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah. In other words, don't change your DNS settings to fix the problem. Just wait for us to figure out a fix. I think it was almost 48 hours later.
Please ask hard enough, because otherwise we'll have to tell you what to do.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, so my point is, Seismic Desktop at that point in time was this massively powerful social media dashboard,
right?
Where I could just add all this information on my screen, and I could just at a glance sort of figure out what was happening out there in the world. Well,
and I can understand exactly in that kind of situation how valuable a tool like that can be. I want to, so we talked a lot about Twitter stuff, uh-huh. and Twitter clients and stuff like that, but what we talked about last show is you've got this whole kind of holistic approach to social media where you're using all three of the main biggies equally. What about, you know, what are you using for Facebook? I assume the official Facebook app on your iPhone and, well, now iPad. They recently, I think, just very recently introduced the iPad app after months of saying that they would never do so. Google Plus has a iPhone app, mm-hmm. I know, and it seems to work very well in the browser on the iPad. I don't believe they have an official iPad
app.
They don't,
yeah.
So, is that what you're using? How are you accessing those tools?
There's an increasing trend of consolidation. Seismic Desktop, TweetDeck on the Mac, Seismic Desktop on the Mac. If Hootsuite doesn't have a Mac app, but it has a very sophisticated web browser console that is essentially a massively powerful social media app. All of these let you sort of not tap in to not only your Twitter feeds, but also your Facebook, your LinkedIn.
Right.
So there are increasingly these tools that let you look at all of your services at a glance.
Yeah.
The reason you can't do this with Google Plus is because Google has yet to release a full set of APIs that will let these developers create these hooks.
Right.
That'll happen sooner or later. So at some point, I'll be able to use TweetDeck and see my Facebook and see my Google Plus and see my Twitter and see my LinkedIn, you know, all in one console.
Right.
With all the columns. And what saddens me greatly is that there is no such tool in existence currently that A, has all this power, but also has Mac-like elegance.
Right.
There are a number of examples of Mac-based social media apps that have, you know, the multi-column format and have the ability to pull in different services, but I've yet to find one that's stable. Is designed properly. I've just given up. If I'm going to do that, I just have to fire up TweetDeck. So there's a neat somebody genius out there has to create the ultimate multi-service social media app with Mac.
Yeah.
Goodness.
I mean, there have been some attempts. Mm-hmm. I believe that there is a. Oh gosh, I'm completely spacing on the name, and listeners are going to have to forgive me, and we'll have to keep an eye out on the show notes. But there was, for a while there, a Mac app that it looked a little bit like Postbox, actually, if you're familiar with the email client Postbox, where you could... it seemed to pull in like Flickr and Facebook and Twitter and a number of things, and it was a native Mac app.
Could that have been Socialite?
Yeah, is that it? Socialite? Yeah, I think that is it. Right.
I may have to look at that again, but I've seen a number of such cases and used it for a little while and given up.
Yeah. Do you think that? You know, Seismic aside, these other things, do you think that having having the focus of a dedicated client for a specific service is important, and maybe the reason why no one's been able to get this multi-service thing quite right. You know, that there is a certain simplicity that comes from such focus from not only a programming and design standpoint, but just from a usage standpoint.
Absolutely, absolutely. I live in the official Twitter app for the Mac.
Yeah.
It's always open. It's always on my screen.
Yeah.
I live in the thing. Yeah. I have certain complaints about it, certain things that I would like tweaked, but generally, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
And so I use that when I'm using Twitter. I use that most of the time.
All right.
On the iPhone, I use TweetBot. There are apps for the iPhone that combine multiple services.
Right.
But I primarily use TweetBot. But there are moments where I have to shift out of Twitter exclusive mode, and shift into, you know, social media superstar mode, and I have to have access to all of these services, and I need to have access, you know, at a glance to all these Twitter accounts and the Facebook and the LinkedIn and the Google Plus. I need there are times when professionally, in person, I need
you
that.
You need that, right.
And so there's a need for both. And here's where I run into difficulties. Like if I'm a journalist and I'm trying to promote something that I've written for the paper, and I want to do this in social media, I'm finding difficulty creating a workflow where I can post once, publish everywhere.
Right.
Like for instance, there's an just to give you an example, if I open Chrome, the Chrome browser,
right,
and I pull up Google Plus, there are a whole bunch of useful Chrome plugins for Google Plus users.
Right.
One of them, and you'll forgive me, I can't remember the name, but we can link to it in the show notes. One of them adds Facebook and Twitter checkboxes.
So you can post once to...
So if you post on Google Plus and then check Facebook and Twitter, it'll post those other services. If you're still in Chrome now, if you're on Facebook, there are Google Plus and Twitter checkboxes.
Ah, interesting.
But... Doesn't work. It doesn't work 100% as it should.
Yeah.
Things get mangled. Things get.
I would imagine that that too. There is that kind of character limit thing, right? That you're going to run into with Twitter. So I would imagine that, you know, if you go over that limit, if it doesn't have enough space, you haven't paid attention to what you're posting, that, you know...
There's a counter. It tells you.
It does it?
Yeah, the extension has a little counter. If you click Facebook but not Twitter, it gives you a Facebook character limit.
Ah, okay.
But if you uncheck Facebook and click Twitter, it gives you a Twitter character limit. Mm-hmm. If you want to post to both Twitter and Facebook, keep Facebook unchecked as you're composing in Twitter. Stop at 140 characters, then check Facebook and then post to both.
Yeah, gotcha. Okay.
My point is, when things goes from Google Plus to Facebook, it sometimes gets mangled it just doesn't work really well. So if there is a need for this post once, publish everywhere paradigm. One way to do that is via Postgres, the blogging service.
Mm-hmm.
It does that very, very well.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you blog to your Postgres blog,
mm-hmm.
then you have all these social media options and they can send things everywhere.
Yeah.
And it does that actually very well.
Yeah. And for those things that you want to post that way, do you find yourself saying, oh, I'll just post this to Postgres to make it easy so I can just have that go out everywhere?
Yes, exactly. If I'm on my iPhone and I want to share a picture with everybody,
mm-hmm.
I usually go through Postgres. Where this model breaks down is with Google Plus. Postgres does not yet have the tools to integrate
right.
Google Plus.
Right.
Once Google Plus is integrated into Postgres,
yeah.
Postgres will again become my default. Right now it isn't.
Yeah.
I'm posting repeatedly manually in different places, which is bugging the hell out of me.
Yeah. So I guess, you know, the upshot of it is that, you know, while you're kind of, you know, keeping up with all of these different social networks, there hasn't yet been a tool that really has allowed you to do one thing once and have it go everywhere in the way that you would wish. You know, that there isn't a client or a set of clients for Mac, iPad, iPhone, whatever, that allow you to kind of manage it all from one place. And so you find that, you know, you're having to do a lot of work to keep up with that, right?
Yeah, yes and no. Again, Postgres is good for that. If you're in TweetDeck, for instance, or Seismic Desktop, the posting window has little pictures of all your accounts, and you can click, okay, I want to go to this Twitter account and this Facebook account, but not this Twitter account. You can check and uncheck whatever you want and then post, and that works very well. But that whole paradigm has broken down with the arrival of Google Plus, because Google has not given developers the tools
to integrate APIs
that. Google Plus, I love Google Plus dearly, but it's wreaking havoc with my days because it's causing me to spend a lot more time on this than I would like.
Okay,
because
fair enough.
Because Google Plus has thrown a complete monkey wrench into the works.
Yeah.
And so I'm desperate for Google Plus to get, you know, those APIs out there so that app developers can integrate the service. That isn't possible yet.
Yeah. Fair enough. Well, you know, once again, I really appreciate you coming and talking about your tools and how you're using them, and I think it's especially interesting to hear both of these times, both episodes, both this one and the last one, about how What is enough for you as a journalist, and the things that you need to keep track of, help to influence and determine your approach and your tools and your desire to keep up with this stuff, right? You know, that, once again, reflecting the idea, as I've said many times before, that this is highly personal, highly subjective, and really case-driven, right? And that even for an individual, you found that what your needs were at one time, conditions changed, things changed, new tools came on the scene. You know, other services, Facebook changed the way that they were doing things, and that allowed you to use it better in your professional life, and so thus you changed what was enough for you at one time became not enough, and you moved accordingly.
Mm-hmm. And I'm very fickle. Like, you know, at one point in time I'll favor certain tools, at other times I'll favor other tools.
Right.
It was all about on the iPhone, you know, depending on what month you ask me, I'll be using this Twitter up or that Twitter. Although Tweetbot, I think I'm with Tweetbot for the duration, because it suddenly dawned on me what an amazing app that is.
Yeah, yeah. I haven't. I'll be the first to admit that I really don't think I've given it enough a shake, especially not since I used it initially when it first came out, and then I was kind of like, okay, back to Twitterific for me.
And before we end this podcast, I want to just throw in a mention of a semi-related topic. I can't remember what episode, but Mike was talking about how he was trying to divorce his phone from his computer, and one of the ways he did that was with podcast downloading.
Mm-hmm. With
the I had been all about, like, docking my iPhone and then downloading my podcast on iTunes and then transferring them over. And it was like, when I went on trips, that whole process broke down. Yeah. But it was such a pain to, like, retrain myself to do this on the iPhone, and I just never bothered for months and months and months. And I finally said, I gotta do this. Mike was my inspiration. I gotta do this. And so I played with, you know, different options, I can't remember the name of it.
Instacast.
It's the only way.
Awesome. It really is.
There's Instacast and there's Downcast. I narrowed my options down to Instacast and Downcast, and I eventually settled on Instacast because its interface is more elegant and beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I also I initially thought there were certain features in Downcast that were not present in Instacast, and I had a conversation with the developers via email.
Right.
And I was asking him, "How about this? How about this? How about this?" And he was saying, and the developer was like, "Yeah, we can do that. Yeah, it does that. Yeah, it does that. Yeah, it does that." And suddenly he answered all my questions. And I realized Instacast, in terms of design, is a masterpiece. It's Tweetbot. Really, it's Tweetbot beautiful.
It really is well done.
And I everything.
I use it all the time. Mm-hmm.
So, Mike, it's
the perfect podcasting client on the iPhone.
So, Mike, I'm making worshiping motions here because you have rocked my world. My life has changed. I'm pleased. Thank you very much.
If anybody else wants to bow at said altar, it's episode 34. Thank you, mate.
Well, speaking of bowing at said altar, one thing I did notice, by the way, to listeners out there, as Julio took out his iPhone, he actually has Instacast in the dock on his iPhone.
That's where it should be.
It rocks my world.
In the launching. So that's how much he cares about podcasts, right?
Yes, you absolutely. Know? That's all I listen to.
Yeah, yeah. And speaking of which, when this episode airs,
it would have been quite some time in, and people may have already heard about this, but yes, carry on.
Minimal Mac is actually part of a new podcast network that Michael has put together. As many of you may know, and some of you don't, Michael is a prolific podcaster. He does several shows. He produces several shows. And he's decided to pull all of those shows under one umbrella called the 70 Decibels Network.
Cool.
Now, you know, what's obviously cool about that is, much like 5x5, you can go to one place, one destination, and find all of these shows.
Or Twit.
Yeah, or twit, you know. But you know, let's shoot low. You know, let's set the bar a little bit lower for Mike here. He's, you know, this whole thing's just gonna get started off, and if he can just, you know, kind of get that 5x5 level, then he can start shooting for that twit level. You know,
They have like millions. Like some of their episodes are like 1 million downloads.
Oh yeah,
I know. We're only a stone's far away from that.
Yeah, just a couple, but. So here's the deal, folks. This is the bottom line. You're going to probably hear some bumper at the end of the show anyway, so you're going to get this twice. So forgive me. But bottom line is this. Everything on 70 decibels is great. It's just awesome, right? This is what you want in your Instacast. So you're going to go, you're going to download Instacast because you heard it and Julio praised it and Mike's praised it before, and you care about podcasts and you care about listening to them, and that's where you want to go. As a matter of fact, all of my show notes, the Enough page, that's all going over to 70 decibels. So when you click on the podcast link at melmomac.com, it's going to take you to 70 decibels because that's where it should be, amongst other really great podcasts that are far better than this one. That said, I really beg of you, go check it out. Listen to some of that other stuff. There's some amazing stuff going
on.
When
is the network launching?
Well, it's launched as of now.
As of the airing of this podcast?
Yeah. I mean, well, it didn't launch with this podcast, but I'm just saying that...
We did launch on the 12th of October, which is...
Right.
Tomorrow, if I'm talking to Julia right now, and last week or so, if I'm talking to you, the listeners, right now.
Correct.
Yes.
Yes. So,
just to make things confusing.
Michael, the URL, please?
70decibels.com.
Yeah. And tell me just real quickly, 70 decibels. Why 70 decibels? Why not 75?
When doing some research and trying to find a name, which I'm sure many people can attest to is one of the hardest things you can ever do when looking to find a project, we were looking around at what is the sort of average sound level for broadcasting and speech, and it falls somewhere between like 50 and 75, so we went for the consensus and went for about 70 decibels.
Yes, we're speaking a little bit loudly, but we're not yelling.
No.
Yeah, there you go.
It's a comfortable level.
It's listenable. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much, Julio, for coming on once again. Julio, what do you want to plug? Plug away, my friend.
Oh, just go to ojezap.com, and I will lead you to all my places.
There you go. Buy his book.
Yeah, buy
Seriously,
the book.
Buy his book. Buy his book. He's got a book. iPad Means Business.
Yes.
Yeah, you got to buy it. All right. Thanks a lot, Michael, as
thank
always.
You.
Congrats on the launch of 70
thank
Decibels.
You. Thanks, mate.
All right. And we'll talk later.
We will. Cheers.
All right. Cheers.